Hi, John.
Hey, Alex.
Do you know what I hate?
What is that?
Mandy Patinkin. I don't really hate him in this. It's just, sometimes I just like to remind the world that Mandy Patinkin is just fucking awful.
Yeah, he's very theatery in a way that I don't like. But as a dude, I think he's probably all right. I don't know. But my hatred for him has cooled. But I was forced to watch Sundays in the Park with George, which is a Stephen Sondheim musical, I believe. With him in it, and it just made me hate him forever.
I kept hearing have you ever heard his Broadway one? I think it's a one-man show, but he does that coffee in a cardboard cup thing.
Oh.
He does it in this awful voice, like, coffee in a cardboard cup. And then the waitress says, hey, mister, would you like a... And he does all these, like, wacky voices. Oh, it is fucking abysmal.
I was very hurt when I learned that he was... Inigo Montoya, because I loved Inigo Montoya, and I'm like, oh, that's the same guy.
Yeah, that's almost as big of a downhill fall as Cary Elwes.
Oh, he's nice.
Oh, is he? Oh, okay. I take it back then. I don't know. I saw him recently. I mean, you know, he aged. That's fine. Yeah, but
he's
like,
in Saw 3D. What more do you want?
I don't know. For him to be in a good movie.
You mean like Dick Tracy?
Oh yeah, we're supposed to talk about Dick Tracy. Police on my back, I've been hiding. Police on my back, they were shooting. Police on my back, and the victim really won't come back. Dick Tracy. So, number one takeaway from Dick Tracy. I was not expecting to see full-out Madonna's tits in this movie.
it's like a PG movie. And it's surprisingly violent and sexual for a PG movie.
There's a lot of violence, like lots of characters, you know, their name die, but like you full out see Madonna's nipples. It's really weird. There's the scene in the Club Ritz where she's wearing like the sheer negligee and it's 100% see-through. Like full out, there's no like, not like I'm staring, like there is no way to not, you must have been looking at your phone or something.
During that scene.
I'm not trying to cast aspersions on you and paying attention to this, but like this isn't me being creepy. There's no way a human looking at a screen, the first thing they see with that is, oh, wow, that's Madonna's like well naked here.
Yeah, honestly, like I know exactly what you're talking about, but I guess I will have to go back and revisit that scene specifically because I don't recall that.
You should. I can lend you some lube.
That's okay. Thanks.
You sure?
I don't want to owe you later. Neither a borrower nor a lender be.
All right. Quick story, John, that I want to tell you. It's not a quick story. It's an anecdote about my life. In the year 1990, I had a Dick Tracy fanny pack.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, it was 9. So this was somewhat acceptable. But
right.
The advertising blitz for this movie came out and it looked so cool and technicolor and weird and like, holy shit, this looks like a comic book. And I don't even think I'd read a Dick Tracy comic, but I was like obsessed with it before it came out that I got a Dick Tracy fanny pack.
Yeah, I remember the onslaught like crazy, but I feel like I missed out on the fanny pack. I think I had maybe a collectible cup from McDonald's or something, but I failed you, Dick Tracy. One of the things I love about Dick Tracy is the makeup work in this is ridiculous. And particularly like I grew up having read Dick Tracy. My dad had a big collection of Dick Tracy things. And I loved them when I was a kid because they were like grim and violent in ways that you didn't normally see on the Sunday, the newspaper comic strip scene. People drowning under ice, someone's head getting caught in like a spiky vice kind of thing. I think in one of the comics, Flat Top gets shot in the neck. So I was very excited for this because it was going to be like fun and exciting. And I think it is. I think it's colorful and crazy and still has kind of like noir-y stuff going on. The sheer aesthetics of it make it worth watching. And like the makeup of characters, like the brow, like they put everyone in here because Warren Beatty wasn't sure he'd be able to make a sequel. So just like all these freakish, grotesque criminals are in there, which I'm sure you could argue is ableist and whatever, but it's more just like the crime deformed them. Although I thought there was a cop that was that way, but it turns out it was just that one actor.
Just ravaged by alcoholism.
Yeah.
No, it's not ableist, I think. I mean, none of them are, I mean, they're all perfectly able. Like, there's no, I mean, other right. than, I mean, I guess Tiny Face would have trouble getting glasses. But other than that, I mean, they're all, you yeah. know, they're all fully functional. You know, this movie is surprisingly not racist
mm-hmm.
for 19. Well, I mean, I guess there, I mean, it's, there's no race in it. I mean, yeah, every exactly. single like, person like, it is a white person, but.
You're white and deformed, or you're just white. That's kind of it.
Yeah. I just got distracted because I was reading Glenn Headley's biography, and she is dead.
Yeah, she died in 2017.
That's unfortunate. She was delightful in this. I
yeah,
liked her.
Yeah, she's great. As Tess Trueheart.
Yeah, the names in this are great. All right, well, before we get too far talking about the movie, Danny Elfman is, I mean, this, it's just the Batman soundtrack. I mean, it is, I get that people that do soundtracks like to have, you know, pull from the same palette. To score their films, but this is just Batman. I mean,
well, it's tough, and I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, despite so much of his stuff sounding very, very, very similar. But like, he was hired to do this because of Batman, and so I wonder if there was a pressure to be like, because he made a like a darker kind of grittier theme that he released on a later album, but it was. They said, no, thank you. But I wonder how much it was like, no, just make it be Batman, but not Batman.
Oh, okay.
Much in the same way, there's that great, yeah. I think we've talked about on the show that there's a web series, Every Frame a Painting. And the guy who does it, Tony Zhao, I believe his name is, did one about how none of the Marvel music is at all memorable. Is it designed to be that way? Or is it because they're just like using temp tracks that they like and making stuff sound like temp tracks? It's this weird thing where it just all kind of starts sounding the same. Like everything sounds like
that yeah.
dun, 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 thing over and over and over again. And so it's probably something like that where the studio was like, we like Batman. Just do more of that, please.
Yeah. I mean, you've got a fine point, except all of his other movies also sound like this. So
right.
It's,
yeah. yeah. But I think this one is to me the closest.
It's real bad. I mean, it is right there. Well, somebody pointed out how similar Elfman's arrangement for, what was it, Spider-Man, the original one, I think he did.
Mm-hmm. The Sam Raimi one?
Yeah. I think it was that movie. It was another one of his superhero movies to the Batman thing. And they are eye fucking identical. I mean, there was tracks. I'm like, this is 100% Batman. I remember this. And then it's Spider-Man. Like, it's, yeah. But this movie, yeah, this is, it was distracting to certain parts because it just, especially because this is a guy running around in it's a overcoat, but it looks like a cape. So there's a lot of Batman in this. It seemed like this is the Transmorphers to Batman at certain times.
Well, in some ways it ended up sort of being, because they certainly, Disney was hoping this would be like another Batman, and it didn't end up being that way. And this was another movie that, like Batman, was kind of in development hell for a little bit and tossed around to different directors and all this stuff before it got made. And yeah, it didn't perform as well as Batman. And so it is a little bit Transmorphers.
Yeah. Does this make money at all?
Not as much as they would have liked if it did. Yeah. Although Warren Beatty always kind of wanted to make a sequel. And there was a weird thing where he was about to like lose the rights. So in 2009 on AMC, they made this weird question and answer thing with Leonard Maltin talking about facts about Dick Tracy, and then Warren Beatty as Dick Tracy answering them.
Oh, that's funny. Just so we can keep the rights.
Just so we can keep the rights. And he ended up winning a lawsuit. There was like an ongoing lawsuit, and I think he won in like, I think it was 2011, where he finally got the rights. He still has, you know, has not made the movie, obviously. And it couldn't be him now because he's pretty old. No idea if another Dick Tracy will ever be made, but there is sort of a renewed appreciation for this movie. And I think, I think part of that comes from not just comic book movies being, you know, just a huge part of the zeitgeist now, but because for me anyway, like, this is a comic book movie done right in that it inspires feeling, when I'm watching it, it inspires feelings of like, man, remember being a kid and seeing this stuff and that kind of feeling, rather than being like, what if we took the stuff you liked as a kid and made it dark and serious?
Yeah.
Which has gotten really, really old.
Like, especially in the opening where they kind of establish the painted background world they live in.
Yes.
That is very comic booky.
Yeah.
It was like, oh shit, I forgot. Because we're so entrenched in, we know what comic book movies are like right now, that you forget that you can actually do things with comic books. Like, as much as Sin City has been kind of ruined by a sequel and by creator problems or whatever, but like it looked like a, you know, it looked this unique way.
Right.
You kind of forget that this can happen and did happen in 1990. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that was a thing I thought about as well, unfortunately, was Sin City. And well, I kind of liked it when it came out. I think that also is the, because it's this gritty crime thing or whatever. It still has that same sort of feel. Whereas this, like this was just bright and colorful and still like action packed and things of that nature. But yeah, it didn't have that faux thoughtfulness that a lot of these things do. Or like you didn't get a backstory about how Dick Tracy's dad was a tough guy and that turned him to how he was. And that mirrors Big Boy's thing with his dad, or, you know, just bullshit, fake psychology kind of stuff. It was just, no, he's just a tough cop. That's it. That's kind of all there is to it. And he's going to fight this gangster who's a big weirdo. And that's it. And it's fine. Like, it's fine. You can just make a movie like that. You don't have to try to do a whole bunch of different stuff and just, like, paste together CG scenes with nonsense. You can just have a fun movie.
Well, the original cut, which was, like, 2 hours, 17 minutes, there was an emotional scene between Dick Tracy and Big Boy where they both discussed that their parents, both their moms were named Martha, actually. It was touching. It was heartrending. And they realized that, you know, although they're on different sides, they're actually fighting for the same cause.
Yeah. Well, and also
the cause of banging breathless Mahoney.
I also think a lot of the comedy in this doesn't feel as forced. I think it's just, you know, the style of comedy that we have now, the whole like, well, that happened. I'm pretty tired of, whereas this is just kind of silly. And I read a thing where it compared Dick Tracy in general to a musical. I mean, not the least of which, because it has several songs by Stephen Sondheim, it does kind of have just a more light, airy feel to it.
Yeah, it's structured like a musical. And yeah, you're right. The comedy is very musical, where it's not funny at all, but it's like humorous.
Yeah, it's the kid constantly asking, when do we eat? It's like, you kind of stuff.
It's kind of vaudevillian setups, yeah, but not setup punchline vaudevillian, like literally like, oh, what would you call that? Like more
just broad.
Yeah, broad. Broad's a good way to put it. I think there's a word that I want that doesn't exist, and I would have just sat there going for 20 minutes. Because if I can't think of it, it doesn't exist. It's not that I'm just
That's right.
Fucking moron. Yeah,
that is correct.
Yeah, it looks really great. That's my kind of. At the beginning, did you notice? This is so small, and I should have screenshot it, but I was watching it on my TV. There's a guy that looks like Saul Goodman in the first scene where they're playing poker.
There were several people in the first 10 minutes of this movie that I thought were Ed Begley Jr. Frankly, too many people that I thought were Ed Begley Jr.
No, I could totally see that. There's the fashion in this is delightful. I think the phrase I'm going to use.
Well, I also like that because of that, like, so they only used 7 colors, like really just 7 colors, because that was apparently what how Sunday comics could be printed, was a mixture of 7 colors.
Well, that was Da Vinci's theory, because he thought 7 was a magical number. That's why there's 7 things in Roy G. Biv. It goes into the whole sacred geometry. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm very smart, please go on.
I like that the suits things, they didn't try so hard to just like ascribe them to a character. You know what I mean? Like obviously Dick Tracy wears this bright yellow trench coat, but like sometimes Big Boy wears this color suits or this color suits or whatever. It wasn't like, you know, oh, but he's green, which represents greed. Get it? It was just, no, let's have a guy wear a purple suit here because it's pretty.
Well, I did like that they coded kind of nameless characters wear green. Like that one scene where there's like 3 guys, there's like green guy, purple guy, green guy. It's just kind of funny that it's like the crime colors.
Yeah. But I mean, I know who they were. Like Influence. Yeah, I know who that is. He uses hypnosis, but not in the movie.
You know, not for nothing, but John, these are based on comic books.
Comic and, strips? Thank you.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I know you're a fan of stripping.
I can't go back to stripping. Actually, they were comic books a bit. Or I think they were just collected in comic books. But
I think Dick Tracy probably predates comic books, right?
Because he started and then he was in the paper.
Yeah.
Which is funny because I would read those stories like in the collected thing. And then I'm like, oh, well, it's in the Omaha World Herald. I'll read that. I'll start following that. And then I forget that there are strips where it's like there's 3 panels and all 3 panels are Dick Tracy trying to untie himself from a chair. See you tomorrow, everybody.
Oh, like, really?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Right. It's like,
that's funny.
It's like when you binge watch stuff a whole lot and then you start watching a weekly show. It's like, oh yeah, I forgot I have to wait for this stuff now.
So here's some delightful things that happen in the beginning of the movie. Everybody's wearing great suits. It opens with kind of newscaster things like Dick Tracy on the move. I'm going to use a whole bunch of old timey things, which is great. I love old timey slang. I love old timey radio. I don't like Danny Elfman anymore. One of the guys goes, "Eat lead, Tracy," which is great. For some fucking reason, Dick Tracy is watching, I think, Wagner at the opera.
Yes, yeah. It almost looks like he's watching the Bugs Bunny version.
Oh, that's probably what the reference is, actually, is because Bugs Bunny is funny. That's probably what the call is there. Yeah, this movie is kind of fast-paced. I don't really know, like, what to talk about in the beginning. Because although there's plot to this, a lot of it is just Dick Tracy runs, gets in a fight, the fight goes into fast motion, and then we go to the next scene.
Yeah. I mean, it is. Like, it is, it's like the plot, which ends up sort of being convoluted, because there's a lot of setup, because it's not even like, and it's something I guess I also appreciate about this movie, is that it's not like an origin story. It's Dick Tracy is around, he's been around, he's a good cop that fights crime. And then these criminals, this is a particular story that's happening to him. You know what I mean? It's not the thing that made his name or whatever. It's we don't need to worry about his Uncle Ben dying or something.
Oh, yeah. He's super famous in media res. He's super famous, which is nice. Because if they do a gritty reboot of this and show his first case, it's going to be so annoying.
No, it's like Rob Zombie doing Halloween, where it's like, what if we explained Michael Myers? No, that sucks. Yeah. Don't do that. Just let this, he's not, as a character, I think a lot of the reason he works in the movie is because Warren Beatty is a charming man. Because there's nothing to him. You get a couple of kind of more human-y scenes, but I think because Warren Beatty is a charming man and a decent actor, like, some humanity is brought forth, but certainly that's not there in the script at all. But he's great, and he directed this too, after a bunch of other people went through, like, one of them, like, possibly even Martin Scorsese was going to have something to do with this. John Landis at one point was attached to it, but then he got too busy negligently murdering people on set and raising one of the worst human beings ever.
So anyway, you were saying how much you love Max Landis, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
favorite writer, I believe, was the phrase you used.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just what if orcs, right? What if orcs were a thing?
What if orcs were one of us?
Mm-hmm. That's how he came up with the movie.
What are you talking about? What movie's that?
Bright.
Oh, he wrote Bright?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And he's, I got him confused.
There's a tweet that's like how he's like, this is going to be better than Star Wars.
Ugh, that's rough. Didn't they make an orc movie? Didn't David Bowie's kid do like one of those orc movies?
He did Warcraft.
Speaking of Warcraft, the War of Love, because introducing Breathless Mahoney.
Yes.
And we get introduced to her as Lips is eating oysters in the grossest scene I've ever seen in my fucking life.
Well, see, so this is interesting. So Lips Manless is played by Paul Sorvino. And as we're introduced to Lips, he's like, disgustingly eating in a club. And this was a role that Sorvino would later go on to perfect in Sicilian Vampire. Because right here, the makeup is doing a lot of the work of being disgusting and off-putting.
Oh, yeah.
But in Sicilian Vampire, he really just takes that on himself and just really lets that shine through.
Yeah. In Sicilian Vampire, he had to have a Canadian drinks magnate give him all of his disgusting.
Yeah. It was awful. But yeah, his character is, he's got these big, gross, droopy lips and is just slurping down oysters as they're delivered to him.
Chili dogs outside the Tasty Freeze?
Yes. What?
I don't know. Every time I hear it slurping, does it? That song?
No.
Slurping down chili dogs outside the Tasty Freeze, that John Mellencamp song?
I don't know, and I'm sorry.
Jack
I'm
and
sure
Diane.
I've heard it. Oh, is that what they're saying there?
Yeah, I think they say slurping down chili dogs. It's fucking gross.
Yeah, I could do without that at all.
Yeah, he's gross, and I'm glad that he went away. But then he got replaced by Pacino, doing what's crazy is an understated performance for Pacino, given his later career.
Like, this seems like a parody of Al Pacino later, but it is Al Pacino, which there's some, I don't necessarily understand this, because he, Al Pacino was very involved in the making of this character, like the makeup for it, because Big Boy in the comics was a short, round guy with a tiny nose, and this one, he's like a weird kind of hunchback with like bizarre cheekbones and a big bulbous nose. But there's apparently one of the trivia things, I don't know if there's any truth to this, that I read was about how like he was going to try to do it under an assumed name. And so like there's a Topps card, like a Dick Tracy trading card that lists his characters being played by like Italian name, Fuccagili or whatever. And that's the only indication of that. But
that sounds like something he would do.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's like, there's no way you can watch this movie and not go, yeah, it's Al Pacino. Like, there's no way you could not see Al Pacino up there. Because, I mean, the makeup is impressive, as I said, but, like, he's, the acting, all of it is just Al Pacino.
But that's for people our age. I think if you only knew Pacino from his later work, which people of you know, the Zoomers or who the fuck people are, the millennials are, that, like, are vaguely familiar with Pacino. I mean, he's irrelevant to them, but, like, you know, that's probably only seen his later stuff. This could easily just be, oh, that's the way old-time actors did. You know, like, we know it because we watched Pacino go from a brilliant actor to a pile of garbage. But, you know, younger people could be like, oh, yeah, that's easily could just be that's just acting in the 90s, you know? Yeah. I mean, we watched, you know, 1940s movies and like, oh, they just all spoke in that accent, which back then people, you know, knew all the nuances.
Yeah.
Blew your mind.
Yeah.
With cultural relativism.
It's trying to fool people that don't give a shit to begin with. Like, okay. It's like Chris Gaines, the Garth Brooks rock alter ego.
Wait, that was Garth Brooks?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I just like, revealed that Santa Claus didn't exist.
Wait, what? No.
Oh, no shit. Damn
it. Oh, now all those movies make sense.
This is not going well for me.
Oh, great. Now I wonder what that smell coming from my chimney is, assuming that I'm from the movie Gremlins.
I like that you assume that about yourself. I could, I don't know. I could be.
I have no proof I'm not.
The test hasn't come
Gremlins.
Back.
I just, the next note I have is go suck an egg. And then I posit that they didn't have penises back then.
Okay.
Well, because why would you suck an egg? I mean, you got perfectly good cock right there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that was... Yeah, waste not, want not, right?
Exactly.
It was the Depression.
I mean, the guy's name is Lips.
It was the Depression. It was hard to come by.
Oh, I guess everybody sold their dicks for food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Bing Crosby used to sing about it. Brother, can you spare a dick?
Yeah. Sandwich boards, pizza. I speak four languages, have 10 inches to sell.
Mm-hmm. That was a bad time.
Egg sucking.
Yeah.
But I mean, really, why do people suck eggs? Was every day Easter in the past?
Boom, got him.
In your face, past.
Yeah, actually, it's pos.
Oh, Jesus, that's really good. Fuck you. That's great.
Yeah, and that's like the first... Because again, when like when you're a kid, I don't, you're not really thinking about it, but the big boy takes Lips and gives him the bath and basically just puts him in a box and covers him with cement and then dumps him in the ocean. And while that is technically like a non-violent way to kill someone, like you're not throwing someone out of a window or choking them to death or something like that, that's fucked up. And like now I'm watching, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's a terrible way to die. When you're a kid, you're like, whatever, it's fine.
Yeah, no, it's really awful. It's very like. If you watch like Batman, the original series or whatever, all like he gets out of all the traps or whatever, mm-hmm. but those traps would be fucking terrible if those were real life.
Oh yeah.
Big Boy is doing his takeover. He doesn't really, whatever. I'm not going to question the logic of it. It's because crimes are being crimed. He gets to be top crime guy.
Yes. Well, he has the idea because they've all just gone after Dick Tracy themselves to, unionize essentially, and because he has the idea, he thinks he should be in charge. And I like that the little cameo, which this is star-studded, like all these famous actors are in it. In fact, this was pointed out later, I didn't notice it at the time, but that Kathy Bates is the stenographer in the scene where they're interviewing Mumbles.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, I did not realize that was Kathy Bates. But like, yeah, Dustin Hoffman, who apparently was in it as Adair, is the story behind that, or the apocryphal story behind that. But James Caan showing up as, I don't even remember what his character's name is, but as the guy who turns him down, which again is a scene that, like, that same thing happens in Batman, where then Jack Nicholson as the Joker, like, fries the guy with his...
Yeah,
he's like, I don't know, and then he fries him. But this is, yeah, James Caan just being like, no, I'm not doing this. And then they blow up his car. But it's
I don't think I put together that was James Caan.
Yeah, and it's apparently like the first time he and Pacino had been on the screen together since The Godfather.
Yeah, finally a good movie that they work with.
Yeah, it's basically just he decides that he's just going to be the mob boss. He's just taken over all the families because organized crime doesn't really exist in this universe. It's all just a bunch of weird faced goons.
Flat Top features prominently in this these scenes. Do you know who that is?
The actor?
Or yeah.
The guy is the guy Flat Top. William Forsythe.
Like, what do I know him from?
Oh, man. What don't you know him from? He's famous,
but like, what's his thing? Like, why? Like, if you're like William Forsythe, the guy from.
He's been in so much stuff, but all I can think of right now is terrible movies that I've seen him in because those are what I've been watching most recently. Like the Brian Bosworth movie, Stone Cold. He's in that. Cold Pursuit with Liam Neeson.
He's in Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead.
Yes,
I like that
he's
movie.
Great. He's great in that. Like Raising Arizona. He's John Goodman's brother in Raising Arizona.
Oh, that might be what I'm thinking of. Because there's something like that's like this kind of bedrock. Oh, he's in The Rock. Maybe that's right.
In The Rock.
He's one of those faces that I'm like, I know that guy, but I can't really figure out like what my kind of touchstone for him is.
Yeah, he's been in tons of stuff.
Totally change the subject just because it's on the thing. I made the note. Was there supposed to be more to this whole Walnuts business, or did they just didn't have enough plot for the movie and then just went, I don't know, we'll do some kind of Walnuts fingerprint gag, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's this. Yeah, they made the thing of his character eating walnuts, and then Tracy used that to gamble on that he was there because they found walnuts at the scene. And I love that shot too, because it's this big wide shot in the warehouse, kind of like tilted upwards a little bit. And the camera doesn't move a whole lot in this movie, which I like a lot, because it's, I think that kind of works with the sort of comic panel, like just the boxed in sort of a thing. But also just aesthetically, I enjoyed that. But anyway, like he just walks and, you know, picks up the walnuts just way off in camera distance and walks like all the way to the front of the camera. Got to test these for prints. So I, you know, before these even get tested, I'm going to arrest Big Boy because he doesn't play by the rules.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that about Dick Tracy and about Big Boy. That's why it's weird that both their moms were named Martha.
Yeah.
Well, that's in the cutscene.
It is not at all examined, the fact that he, for being all fighting for truth and justice, that he goes against the law a lot. Because there was like, the chief is not going to like this. The DA is going to be pissed. This is inadmissible. But he's like, whatever. I'm Dick Tracy. Shut up. Like all good cops.
Yeah. Well, it seems like the rest of his department is pretty bad at their jobs. So mm-hmm. I guess he has to basically just do it. Also, he doesn't seem to sleep. And he's like the only cop that works there.
That's true. Yeah. The other two guys are just there to ask him questions.
Yeah. So this leads into what I'm going to consider the worst scene in the film. And not that it's a bad scene, but I found it so irritating. Was when Pacino as Big Boy, what's his name? Big Guy? Big Boy?
Big Boy.
Big Boy. Big Boy is trying to teach Madonna and the troupe the dance number. And it is MST3K bad, like just interminably long. And I get what they were doing, but it's an unfunny person trying to make something funny. And it is unfucking comfortable.
It is extremely long. I will definitely unforgivably long. I guess I'll say that. But I did enjoy it by watching this awful little troll dance around, and it really helped underline the grotesqueness of, because even though he's not as physically repulsive as say the Brow or Littleface or something like that, it just made him look way worse. But yeah, he's ridiculous in that scene.
Oh, it's just the grasping for comedy. Ugh, it is. It's like watching improv go wrong.
Well, yeah,
it
he kind of has really the Robin awkward. Williams thing in this movie where he's just like, I'll just keep talking. I'll just keep going. And eventually something funny will happen.
He is getting Robin Williams syndrome of just, or the Portlandia
effect.
Yeah, I will say enough stuff that you'll be like kind of Stockholm syndrome to thinking this is amusing.
Mm-hmm. I did like some of it, though. You know, like, I don't know, scripted or ad-lib, but some of his stuff, like his weird quotations, and then particularly at the end, when he's just going on his whole diatribe while he's tying Tess to the Giger, and then he's like, can't you see that I love you? That doesn't make any sense at all.
No, he's not bad. The whole thing's not bad. I like his misquoting. He's quoting like Sung Tzu and stuff like that. Like, that's fine. It's just literally the dance sequence was just, it was long and it just felt like it felt like someone bombing, like you're watching bombing. Uh-huh, uh-huh. This movie was edited. You did it. Like, it didn't.
Right. Well, see, there's even like a longer cut apparently that exists, like a more, like longer than 2 hours that apparently Warren Beatty has, but the, you know, the studio made him cut it down to under 2 hours, which,
yeah, it was,
God, can you imagine that? Can you imagine someone going, hey, you should cut down this superhero movie? What a beautiful world the 90s was.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think that's somewhat recent. Even the early Marvel movies weren't amazingly long. That's the last 50% of them.
That's still a lot of them. That's still like 9 movies.
Oh, no, totally. But it's not as bad. It's not as dire as you think, because I went back and watched a lot of the Marvel movies somewhat recently, and like a lot of them were like sub 2 hour. Like, I mean, they were like movie length, instead of, it's surprising because now even the shittiest of the movies, like, you know, like Ant-Man 2 is like, you know, 2:30 or whatever. It's like, Jesus Christ. Like, fucking edit.
Aquaman did not need to be over 2 hours.
No. Though, I mean, that was an epic tale of, you know, whatever the hell happened to that. I don't know, two brothers were fighting or something.
Yeah. Aquaman is almost 2.5 hours. That's insane. Yeah.
You know, both those manta rays, their parents were named Martha.
Martha Ray. Denture wear. But I'm old.
Yep. Somewhere around here, the kid shows up, who I think is delightful that his name is Kid. He actually doesn't have a name. Very comic booky.
I like this actor. I thought he was quite charming. Like he was cute enough and precocious enough without like them really underlining it or like making it like super cloying or something. Or even like the more heartfelt moments he has with Tracy aren't super giant puppy dog eyes and busting you over the head with cuteness.
Yeah, they hit the tone really well, because although he did everything that would deserve the line, at no point did he look at the camera and go, ain't I a stinker?
Right, yeah.
You know, it's the actions but not the playing to it, which they hit that tonally really well. And it's funny that they establish him as smelling like shit when he arrives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At some point, Madonna stops by the police station to try to fuck him. Not the kid.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because there's an ongoing thing where, because he goes to interview her at the club, or like, after they bust up the singing scene that you hate so much, because they think Big Boy murdered Lips. Correctly so, they think that. And then he goes back to the dressing room and they're throwing game at each other, which they were dating at the time, which I thought, for Madonna not being a great actress, I thought that they had some nice chemistry on screen.
I think Madonna is weirdly charismatic in this. Mm-hmm. I've never been much of a Madonna fan. I mean, her music's, you know, fine for what it is, but, you know, that whole enigmatic, like, she was like the most famous person in the world back in the 80s, and she's never did anything for me. Not in like a shitty way, just, you know, she's a famous person, you know, glad she existed, but really nothing for me. But I found her engaging in this, which is weird, because it's not like she's doing all that much other than, you know, she's a smoke show and sings a bit, yeah.
Well, and then like later she comes to Tracy's office to try to hit on him.
Is that when she asks if she wants to eat her fresh peach?
That's later. That's when she comes to his house.
Because that was just hilarious. I'm like, wow, that's not even an entendre at that point. Like, because again, this is a children's movie. Like, I mean, maybe it's not a children's movie, but Jesus Christ.
I brought some ice cream. What flavor? Pussy.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think I ever heard you say pussy before. That was weird.
No, it's uncomfortable for everybody. No one enjoys it. That's why I don't do it. But, well, that's exactly why I don't do it. Again, this was I don't know. I think it was this scene where they're all like very backlit. Like you can see the outline of Warren Beatty's face in light when he like drops the earring into her glass. Because like, hey, I found this earring at the scene of the crime. Which I also like that she walks in with a cocktail. She comes to the police station with a cocktail. But there are so many in this movie split diopter shots where.
Oh, yeah, they definitely call them that.
Yeah. Well,
don't explain what that is, though. Like, make sure to not do that.
Both things are in focus. Like a guy close up at the front of the screen and then someone deep in a hallway far away are both in focus. But you can kind of tell there's like blurriness in the middle. I don't know if Citizen Kane made them big, but I know that gets a lot of credit for that. But they're all over the place in this. And I always love that. It's like an old timey film effect, but it always makes me happy. Like when he's in the greenhouse and the gas is pumping through to knock him out. And there's you see the close up of the tube spitting out the gas while he's in the background.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. I know the look of what you're talking about. I did not know that phrase, and I'm gonna say it's your thing. I'm gonna forget it by the next time it mentioned.
Yeah, but that's thanks to the cinematographer Vittorio Storaro, who also did The Last Emperor and Apocalypse Now. I wanted to look it up because the whole thing, all the colors made me think of in October I watched it shit ton of horror movies. I rewatched a lot of Italian horror, and those are known for being like so colorful. And I wanted to see if he ended up doing any, because this movie felt like almost an extension of that kind of stuff. But he did do an early Dario Argento movie. Actually, his first one, The Bird with the Crystal Plumage, which is stylish, but not that kind of stylish. But he did
that
amazing
sounds
work
insufferably
here.
Pretentious.
It's not. Oh my god! It's
oh really? Because
like,
that is a
no.
That
it,
is
it,
a
it, it, oof. Dario Argento makes horrible or not horrible, but like he's known for giallo, these kind of like trashy thrillers.
Yeah, that's the Suspiria guy and other one. That
Suspiria
yeah.
and Inferno are more like magic. He more likes guys with leather gloves stabbing people. That kind of thing. But Deep Red, Profondo Rosso or whatever. But Deep Red is probably the best one of his giallos. But Vittorio Storaro didn't cinematographer eyes that one either. I know film words.
I mean, I was on my back. I was knocked down from how impressive your film linguistics are.
I actually just read a book about Dario Argento. That's the only reason why I bring it up.
Well,
I mean,
I hate Italians.
I did not read a book about Dario Argento. I forgot.
I mean, I had a book explained to me while I was playing Warhammer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I watched a YouTube review of a tweet about a book.
Perfect. You'll never believe what happens in 7 minutes.
I won't. And I didn't.
There's around here, I don't really know when it happens, but there's some very unimpressive parkour happening where Dick Tracy jumps to a light post and kind of shimmies down. And
well, he eats it on the light post. Like his face hits the light post.
Yeah, apparently that was a fuck up from the stuntman. Like that actually happened. But
I've heard stories that that Warren Beatty said that that was him doing it and that that's why he did the stunt so badly, because it was him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's
He's
funny.
Like, no, I'll do my own stunt. Chunk.
Yeah, because it is not like the stunt work, quote unquote, is not impressive here. Although the fight scenes are funny. Like, I love the giant swinging telegraphed punches and the fast motion. It's pretty delightful.
Yeah. And like you sometimes you'll just, you see them happen in shadow only.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think this whole thing adds to the phoniness of it all with like the completely cartoonish matte paintings in the background of the city, like that could not possibly look real to any discernible eye, but they're not going for that.
Yeah.
Like it's going for this hyper real thing without being too campy about it, which I think is it falls in that sweet spot. Cause like, it's not like the Schumacher Batman where it's like, let's just be campy and crazy and dumb with it. Where it is like, no, we can still just make a fun movie, but we're just going to make it colorful. And it's going to be almost like a play where, you know, none of this is real, but like, you're going to play along. So when you see him like jump onto a light post, you're like, yeah, woohoo, even though it's not that impressive and he does it badly.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of not being at all kind of campy and like the Joel Schumacher Batman, the little kid saves him from getting exploded from a steam engine and becomes an honorary detective.
Yes. That's how that happened. That's how you join the police force.
Oh, is it? I had no idea. Yeah. That's where there's the funny run about him being named Kid here, of that he can't get his official detective badge at 7 or whatever the fuck that kid is because he doesn't have a name yet. Around here, we get introduced to no-faced, wobbly voice guy.
The blank.
And this is the question, I think you mean.
the blank came first. Thank
you. Yeah, I'm sure. I know. I think the question's from like the 70s, or maybe you got rehashed from old comics, but this is where the kind of background plot starts. So basically there's going to be a setup where, no, I don't even know what happens. I'm so confused. I mean, I got what happens in this movie, but like, there's so many scenes.
There really are. And there's a lot of montages, which would explain, some of the increased length. Could have been just like fleshing out of these scenes that perhaps, or these sequences that perhaps didn't need it. Because like even the one of Big Boy taking over the town, or it's when Dick Tracy starts bugging Big Boy's office. You start seeing all these things he's doing getting thwarted. And that goes on for a very, very long time.
Though there's a hilarious part. Sorry, just have to point out because I'd be so bad if it. And that montage of Dick Tracy busting people because there's a bug at the Ritz.
Yeah,
is that scene where Dick Tracy pops out of hanging meat to punch a criminal?
Yes.
That is probably the best scene that's ever happened in any movie we've watched.
So during this, the piano player at the Ritz, 88 Keys. Played by the aforementioned Mandy Patinkin, called for a secret meeting by some shady character and ends up being this person with no face that's like, hey, give this letter to Big Boy and tell him you found it under your door. And here's $5,000 to do it. And at first I was like, well, why don't you just slide it under his door? But I think it's you needed to give him the money, but also like, hey, I'm running a scam here. I need to make sure I'm running a scam and I need you on my side. Not, I hope for the best. But the whole thing is that the blank is telling Big Boy like, hey, I'll kill Dick Tracy for you because I know if he gets killed, you'll be the main suspect. So I'll do it in a way that you won't be implicated. And Big Boy's like, this is garbage. Get away from me. I don't know who you are. But then that will come into play later. Because, there's this through line, like it's just going to be Dick Tracy and Big Boy. But then all of a sudden it's like, oh, no, wait, then this whole new character shows up.
Yeah, no, I was good with the two. And the although this movie's heavy on plot, it's kind of light on plot. Like, I mean, nothing really happens. So it's nice to have a complication to get us to the finish.
Yeah, it's very simply complex. It's not a deep movie.
I mean, I think it's the deepest movie we've watched.
Well, I mean, that
we watch garbage.
Yeah. Right.
The bug guy. What did they call him?
It's Bug.
Oh, they just call him Bug. Okay. Yeah, I thought he had a wittier name.
Oh, yeah. I could not tell you that guy's name, but another great character actor.
He's from Scrooged, isn't he?
Yeah. He's the homeless guy in Scrooged. And he was... Tango and Cash's version of Q. Like, he built them a whole bunch of cool stuff, like all their gadgets at the end of the movie.
I don't remember that. I've certainly seen that movie. The only thing I remember is them showing their butts and and they talk about each other's dicks a lot. It's basically the best movie ever made.
Yeah, I would totally watch it.
Yeah. So Dick Tracy punches out of hanging meat. He punches four guys at once. Oh yeah, so Bug spills his coffee because a bug was there and it startled him, which is really deep writing. And so that's where he gets caught and they set him up by giving fake crimes to go down.
This is a bit that I love. When they discover it, Big Boy is yelling at one of his underlings and is like, he sees the drops on the newspaper. And they start to figure out that maybe there's someone upstairs, so they get all quiet. And there's this overly long shot, but I love that it's overly long, of Big Boy like realizing it and he's just pointing at the ceiling and like making squirrel faces, sucking his teeth basically and pointing up. And you think like, oh, this is leading to something. And then it's like, no, this scene's done now. We're just moving on to the next scene. It's completely bizarre and I love it.
I agree with you up until the I love it. It's so great. I think I hate Pacino.
Oh, see, I think he just... on purpose is eating it up in this movie. And I love it.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. It's whatever. It's there were times I was into it, but I don't know, I just guess the mugging the camera just got old.
No, I get it. It's the same way now that I because I was talking to someone about Thor Ragnarok and about how just like I like Jeff Goldblum, whatever appeal was there is gone now. Like I can like I recently saw The Fly. I still like Jeff Goldblum in The Fly, but Jeff Goldblum now, no thank you. I'm done with whatever it is he's doing. It's not necessarily that that's bad. It's just I'm good. I've seen it enough times. Thank you.
Yes, I totally get you. I'm not with you only because I haven't. Jeff Goldblum hasn't been ruined for me. Like, I loved him in Ragnarok, but like all of him being like self-aware, witty, the current version of him, I've seen like 2% of it.
See, so I don't even blame him for that. It's just more like the internet writ large. I've seen too much of the zeitgeist around it.
Yeah, I try to ignore the internet as much as I possibly can. So we're at a point, there's a whole bunch of other montages. Basically, Dick Tracy gets set up and sent to jail. They forge a signature from Dick Tracy to give to the mayor saying, I'm gonna blackmail you.
Well, he gives to the DA, played by Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, the DA. I don't think I realized that's it. I was thinking there was the mayor. Yeah, the DA. And then they also forge a signature from the girlfriend, maybe? I don't even know what happened. Either way, he goes to jail. there's machinations happen, and he goes to jail.
But yeah, no, so what they do is, so after Big Boy has lost so much, he's like, you know what? Fine. 88 Keys, let's go with your guy. I'm sick of this crap. Let's go with your guy. Because they do try to blow up Dick Tracy in a basement apartment, or in the basement of an apartment building. That doesn't work, and so he's finally like, yep, let's have him threaten the DA, who's shady. There's a scene earlier with him being shady with the Big Boy, which again, another scene I love, which is Big Boy, they're in like a graveyard or something. And he's again, lit from the back, from the rear of the frame, walking towards the camera, just outlining the plot about how his people failed to kill Dick Tracy. Boy, these people wanted to kill Dick Tracy. Dick Tracy should be dead, but these guys blew it. I should be surrounded by General. I'm got footmen or whatever he says. And he just walks right up to the camera, and like the person at the front of the camera who you don't see just turns around, and it's Dick Van Dyke, the DA. And just, I love that was just one shot. That is a man yelling in the graveyard.
That's the part that looked like Tim Burton. Yes. That graveyard was very Tim Burton-y, and the swelling Danny Elfman stuff. It's like, oh boy, this is confusing.
Yeah.
No, it was a cool looking shot though.
But so then, because he's failing to get Dick Tracy, he tells Mandy Patinkin, get your guy. Let's do this. And the whole scheme is that he's going to, they forge Dick Tracy's signature on this letter, threatening letter to the DA that says, hey, I've got goods on you. I know that you're corrupt. Meet me at this place. When the DA shows up, they drug Tracy. They kidnap Tess Trueheart to get Tracy to go try to meet her. They've had a falling out because she caught Dick Tracy kissing
Rufus so Mahoney, complicated.
Yeah. which makes sense now a little bit, because with like she's coming on him really strong, but then also kind of setting him up. But so they kidnap Tess Trueheart so they can have Tracy come to the greenhouse she works at to try to meet her. Because giving him a letter, it's like, yeah, let's make amends. He goes to the greenhouse, gets knocked out. They take his coat and hat, meet the DA, shoot the DA, put the DA's body in like a hotel room or something with Tracy. Stage, like Mandy Patinkin starts yelling loudly about, give me the money, I'm not giving you anything, blah, blah, blah. And Tracy wakes up as the cops arrive, and he's holding a gun, and the guy's dead. So as we said, it's a very simple, simple plot.
I mean, as straight as a Roman road. I mean, it is easy peasy. There's no, how could it go wrong?
Yeah.
And it doesn't. So he
that's it. And that's the end of the movie.
He dies in prison. Yeah.
But yeah. So then there's the thing where he's in jail and Big Boy is back in Descendants, which I like. Again, you get another montage, but they do like the camera is in the background zooming in on Warren Beatty in prison. And then just starts like spinning around and hangs out spinning on him for a very long time as stuff is, new scenes are going on above it.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know why the movie willing to do that, like to take its time with the dumbest stuff. I really enjoyed for some reason.
This movie has balls. No doubt. He gets snuck out of jail from his cop friends to see if he can't solve his own, his own getting stitched up. Mm-hmm. And he runs into the kid, and the kid's picked his own name. You know what that name is, John?
Mm-hmm. I do. I saw the movie.
John Myers.
That's right. I was very excited. I clapped.
Oh, sorry.
Because I was looking at that name.
I was looking at my Skype window. It was Dick Tracy Jr.
It was Dick Jr.
Boy, does he wells up. He's got a little tear in his eye. And he's like, yeah, that's all right with me, kid.
But I do like the bit when they pick him up and he's trying to suss it out. His detective work is just sitting back there going, realizing that he was set up by a third party who's trying to set up both him and Big Boy. And is it the end of the friend of my enemy is my friend? The enemy of my enemy is my enemy?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous. But it's that kind of Jeff Goldblum-y, to bring him back. Like, just watching a guy figure something out. It doesn't make any sense, but it's fun to watch.
Yeah, and it's fun that the cop's going like, hey, what did he say? He said the enemy of his enemy is his enemy. And then he cuts back to him in the back. It's like, but if the enemy of my friend is my enemy, so my enemy is... But yeah, it was fun.
Which I think that kind of humor feels more like Broadway-y or, you know, musical-y, theater-y. Some kind of Aaron Sorkin bullshit, except I like it.
Yeah. there's a scene where they cut back to Madonna, Breathless Mahoney, and she's singing songs about addition. Mm-hmm. And then songs about math. And mm-hmm. and I just made the comment, oh, it's like, it's sexy. They might be giants.
Sexier. They might be giants.
But boy, they really spent a lot of time with her singing about math. I mean, that scene went on for about fucking 8 minutes.
You get Stephen Sondheim to make the songs and you don't cut Sondheim, honey. He's in there.
I mean, that's something you could say, or let me just pitch this. You can cut Stephen Sondheim.
Oh, honey, no.
Why do you keep calling me honey?
Honey, no.
Yeah, no, that's what you said before. I was just questioning what your usage of honey was.
No, honey.
Oh, were you trying to save me money when I check out on Amazon?
Honey, yes.
Punchline
goes
here.
It's the new sponsor for the show.
Is Punchline
goes here?
I don't, literally had nothing else to say. I thought it'd be funny because I get those ads all the time. Mm-hmm. That's it. So enemy is enemy's enemy, math. There's a fun sequence here where they're all trying to raid the Ritz Club there. Dick Tracy jumps through the skylight to try to save his gal and stop Big Boy, and he's stuck in the attic. So then they have to do a seesaw type trebuchet
lever
maneuver thing to get him out. And I didn't hate it until this moment talking about it, where it's like, do they just think they have all the time in the fucking world in this movie? Like, Jesus Christ, that was a lot of time to spend on something that didn't matter at fucking all.
No, but it's also, because I went back and I was rereading some comics after watching this movie, and there's a bit where in a Flat Top storyline, he has Dick Tracy hostage, and the way Dick Tracy is able to escape is while he's playing the piano in Flat Top's lair in this apartment he's holding up, and he's tapping his foot, but what he's actually doing is tapping Morse code to the person who lives downstairs, who he overheard mention that she was a WAC in the war, meaning she knows Morse code. So it's that kind of like convoluted shit where it's like, absolutely, this comic book nonsense, yes, this is how you figure this out. But also I would like to point out that a year before or a year after, I forget what the chronology is, but they do the same bit in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, where they do like a lever thing to fling Morgan Freeman, and it might just be a straight up catapult. It's been a while since I've seen the movie, but
John, can we have one fucking episode where we don't argue whether it's a catapult or a trebuchet? I just want to go one fucking episode.
I'm sorry. Well, try being right, and then we don't have to have this argument.
87th time we've done this.
Yes.
Ooh, a catapult. It's a trebuchet. Yeah. All right. Let's fucking let it go.
Yeah,
also, we should probably stop watching movies with catapults and trebuchets.
We settled this during La La Land, and yet you keep bringing it up.
So, seesaw, that happens. There's lots of death for a kids movie. Oh, yeah, there is a brutal shootout that happens outside of the club where all the villains are trying to get out.
Yeah.
And they just murder everyone.
Well, and it's drawn out with a whole bunch of different shots, but essentially, it's a car driving and crashing. Like, that's it. But so all these tertiary characters, like Flat Top has been the Heavy's right-hand man this whole time. Yeah, just mowed down. The other guy, Itches, I think, or whatever the guy's name is, mow him down too. Doesn't matter. They're all just guns, guns, guns.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that, because rather than have this stupid protracted CG on CG fight scene, it's like, And what if we just shot him? That's what Dick Tracy would do. Good, done.
It's sure. I mean, it was efficient. It was just, again, like, what age group was this aimed at? Like, his fucking, like, there's tits, there's cunnilingus references, and there's brutal shootouts.
But yeah, it's pretty violent. And then what, but I do like, and I didn't really think about this till now, just the play that the blank does make on Big Boy is that it kind of sets Big Boy up to make it seem like that he is kidnapped to test Trueheart. And oh, so yeah. to get out of that, Big Boy kidnaps Tess Trueheart.
I admittedly found some of this funny, was where him trying to be like, look, I didn't kidnap you, so I have to kidnap you. Now I'm kidnapping you. I'm sorry for that. And then yeah, him just be like, I'm sorry, you're going to be fine. I got to blow your fucking head off.
Yeah, like he just can't not talk.
Yeah.
And I bet I did enjoy that whole bit. And his weird escape hatch rail car thing.
Hoo-ah, I'm on a rail car. This was put here during Prohibition, which was last week.
Classic Rodney Dangerfield line. That's what you're doing, right?
Hey, look at that groundhog over there. I like golfing.
I still have never seen that movie.
What's that, Caddyshack?
Yeah.
It's those movies that people that were raised in the 70s think is funny and they're kind of wrong. It's got Goonie syndrome, where if you watched it when you're young, you swear it's really funny. But if you watch it when you're like your thinking parts all grown in, it's just, you know. It's,
I have seen Caddyshack 2.
Yeah, I mean, Caddyshack 2 is pretty terrible, but yeah,
it's got Randy Quaid.
Caddyshack 1 is, you know, there's some charming people being charming, but it is what it is. Let's stop talking about Caddyshack.
Okay.
So Warren Beatty has to run after his gal, who's with Big Boy. And I gotta say, Warren Beatty runs well, especially for a man of his age. Like, he looks athletic.
He's the proto Tom Cruise.
I thought we made fun of Tom Cruise for running stupidly.
Yeah, but he does it a lot. So you got to get
I don't
that.
Know. You live on the internet more than I do. I know that's a thing on the internet that like people talk about Tom Cruise's running. But
He runs. Every movie has him running, but he also has a very specific run. I wouldn't say it's bad, but he has a very specific run.
It's just more his kind of gait is very identifiable. No, Warren Beatty, like, he looks athletic. Like, he's running. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where you would expect, you know, he's what, late 40s in this?
I think he's 85 in this.
Oh, then he runs. Actually,
think he's like in his 50s.
Oh, yeah. He runs great. It's just because you expect, I don't know, anytime I see like an old white guy running in a movie, you expect it to be like kind of labored. And it's like, shit, no, that guy looks like he's got moves. Like, it looks like he used to be an athlete or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was born in 1937. So that would probably put him at about, 50.
Oh, yeah, like late 50s. Shit. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, good on him. Yeah, he looks good. Runs well. There's a great scene where they get stuck on the drawbridge and the fireworks are going off in front of the painted backgrounds.
Yeah.
So fuck, it looks great.
Yeah.
Like, this movie looks so good. Like, I kind of wish it was better because it looks so good.
Well, and it's like all the colored lighting works really well. Also, because I feel like there's this big move now where style is just take a red light on one side and take a blue light on another side. And then they kind of make this weird kind of pinky purple thing. Like, look at the cover of Neon Demon. And that's kind of a style that everyone is aping these days. And well, again, that has its roots in Italian horror and like Dario Argento and stuff like that. I do think like this movie does it so well. Like, I love how the streets are all just green a lot of times. And it's never, you don't need to explain it. It just is. And it's pretty and it's nice and we're done with it.
It would be funny if they explained it. Like, if they're like in the longer run, like if they made this movie like they make current movies now, like, well, the streets look this way because when Zod attacked and blah, blah, you know.
Right, yeah. We need, because otherwise everyone is on Reddit or on their stupid podcasts going, how come it's like this?
No.
Not us, though.
Do you think this is the first movie that at the end of the movie there's like a blue laser going up in the sky? Because technically there were blue fireworks going up at the end of the movie when the bad guy and the good guy are fighting right towards the end of the act.
I want to say no. I think Terms of Endearment had the first one.
Yeah. I want to say, shut your dumb mouth, Alex. That's a fucking stupid thing, but I'm trying to be politic about it. Okay, got it. Yeah.
Yep. Or I was just trying to make a joke. Either one
you
works.
Ugly, ugly, stupid piece of shit.
Okay, now that was implied. That bit was
implied. That's always implied. That's implied in our mandate.
That's there. Yeah.
Lips mandate.
so now that's a Dick Tracy villain.
Now that's dumb. So they go into the gear room to have their climactic.
Yeah. Some clock tower, I guess.
Yeah, clock tower that's not on a tower. And that's pretty much it. They just basically just they get in a fight. He knocks big guy down into the workings and he's dead.
Yeah. Well, the blank shows up.
Oh, yeah.
And is all like, ha, ha, ha. I set this up. I'm a genius. Dick Tracy, kill him. Dick Tracy doesn't do it. The kid, like, who has snuck along, tackles the blank. Big boy finds an opening, grabs a gun. Dick Tracy stops him and, pushes him over the edge of something. And he falls into the works. And then, but after he's already shot the blank. And then once he unties Tess Trueheart from her being attached to the gears, you find out that the blank was really Breathless Mahoney this whole time. Now, canonically, the blank was just some ugly dude. And he just hit his face because he was an ugly guy. But I liked the twist here.
Well, I don't like them breaking canon myself. I think canon should be enshrined and not messed with. But anyway, I think she's probably a Snoke clone.
Yes. Yeah.
I got to say, I felt like a biggest fucking idiot, because what I've seen this movie before, I mean, it was 1990 when I saw it, but when they took the mask off and it was Madonna, I went like, oh shit. Like, I know I did not see that coming.
That's awesome.
It was crazy because one, it's this movie. It's like, of course it's going to be her. It's the only other named character left. But then also I've seen this movie before. So it's just, yeah.
Then they go away kind of happily and he awkwardly asks Tess Trueheart to marry him.
Yeah, they can't really get it out. I guess it's like some part of his character. Like he's such a man that he can't talk about feelings or something.
Yeah. And then the kid changes his name to Grogu. And everyone's happy. The end.
Hey, spoiler alert, John.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dick Tracy, that was weird. And I'm glad we revisited it. That was a fucking weird movie.
If you watched when you were a kid, or not at all, watch it now. It's great. Like it does have like slightly slower pacing in places compared to some movies now. It's just a goofy amount of fun. And
yeah,
I like it.
And even the slower pacing, it's not like 70s pacing. It's fine. Like it's not the original Solaris or anything. Like it's just, there's a few spots where you're like, maybe play a couple of moves in Scrabble or do something else while somebody's mugging to the camera for the 15th time.
Like honestly, going back, we kind of skipped over this. You being annoyed by Al Pacino made Dustin Hoffman bug the crap out of me in this movie.
Dustin Hoffman annoyed me as well, but he wasn't in it as much. So I was kind of if he had as much screen time as Pacino, I would have been equally amused, annoyed. Yeah,
I can't exactly put my finger on what it is, but it was a role that didn't seem right for him in the first place, and just I don't know. I think I just also don't like Dustin Hoffman that much.
I'm not a big Dustin Hoffman fan either, to be honest.
Yeah.
So John, next episode, we're gonna celebrate the birth of the big guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. A man that some people would say magical. A lot of people believe in. A lot of people that bring joy to our hearts every year around this time.
Mm-hmm.
That we remember the birth of Buddy the Elf.
Oh, I was thinking Bret the Hitman Hart.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, he was probably born around this time, too. He's got a whole Messiah complex thing. Did Jesus ever put wraparound sunglasses on his followers' heads?
Well, depending what version of the Bible that you're reading.
Yeah, because I might be thinking about the Hitman Hart, too.
In the King James version, no. In the Chad version, yes.
Yeah, what about that, the New English or whatever?
Nope. Yeah, no. That's all just Amish.
That's the Anvil Nightheart.
Mm-hmm.
He plays Judas. But anyway, we're going to watch Elf, the movie starring Will Ferrell, Zooey Deschanel, that guy from The Godfather.
Yeah, James Caan.
James Caan.
Yeah, we're doing a month of Caan movies that he's sort of in.
Yes, the Wrath of Caan, we're going to call it.
Yeah.
So to celebrate the birth of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ of Nazareth.
Bret the Hitman Hart.
The one and only God that we believe in on this show, the very Christian John and Alex Hate stuff, we believe in the Christian God.
Glory, Bret the Hitman Hart.
Glory, glory, hallelujah. John, I know it's being funny, but let's not try to, alienate, in this time of year. You know, let's not, this isn't Happy Holidays in this house. It's Merry Christmas.
It's Merry Bret the Hitman Hart. Yes, please. I will.
All right, fine. I'll convert. Yeah, so we're watching Elf. Find it. It's available places. Go, yeah. Go watch it. Report
it's
back.
It's a movie.
All right. Bye.
That's it. Goodbye.